The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
On the evening of May 17, 2024, 39-year-old Nikki Chang Saylee McCain, a beloved mother, daughter, and sister, texted her sister saying she was visiting her brother-in-law in a Redding, California hospital. Just after midnight, she mentioned returning her mother-in-law's car to her house on the Redding Rancheria Reservation. That was the last time anyone heard from her. A week later, Nikki's truck was found abandoned in a remote area 40 minutes from her home. Despite extensive searches, Nikki remains missing. It's been more than 5 months since she disappeared, and investigators are still working to piece together what happened that night. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. Okay, so Nikki Chang Saylee McCain, probably going to refer to her as Nikki for the rest of this episode just to make my life a little easier, but this is a relatively new case, 5 months. So why are we covering it? Well, we're here to make a difference. We're here to have an impact, and we are fortunate enough to have a couple of Nikki's family members involved with this episode. You're going to hear from them throughout tonight's case, and they're looking for help. Their sister is missing. They don't know where she is. There's obviously some speculation around what happened to her and who might be responsible. But as I always say to you guys, we can't get tunnel vision. Yes, Occam's razor, simple explanation may be the right one, but that's not always the case, because if it was, we would have a lot more of these unsolved mysteries solved to this day, and we wouldn't be sitting here discussing them. But that's just not the reality of the situation. So when we have an opportunity to help out a family in an amount of time that may actually make a difference, because when we talk about all these cold cases, relatively speaking, this one's fairly new. And so when Haley came to me and said the family wanted to work on this one with us, I was all in on it. Now, obviously, there are some drawbacks about covering a case that's this new. Law enforcement hasn't released much information to the public, and I completely understand why. So we will be speculating on some things, but overall, this is a case that's timely and that we have a real possibility that Nikki is still out there somewhere and in need of help. And if there's anything that we can do, that I can do to help facilitate that, whether it's someone who watches this or listens to it, I'm going to do it because that's what it's all about for me. So let's not waste any more time. Let's dive into this week's case. Nikki Cheng Sei-Li was born on November 9th, 1984 in Thailand while her parents were living in a refugee camp following the Vietnam War. Her parents spent several years in the camp, during which time they had four children, including Nikki and her sisters Kay and May. Eventually, the family relocated to the Seattle, Washington area, and then to Redding, California, where Nikki's parents welcomed three more children, including a daughter named Chloe. And as I just mentioned a couple seconds ago, we had the opportunity to speak to both Chloe and Kay, and you're going to be hearing from them throughout this episode. Now, after arriving in the United States, Nikki's family connected with other relatives. Here's Kay talking about what it was like.
We all found each other and they all kind of lived together, like in the same communities. So there's a lot of community support. So we were very close with our cousins growing up, very close to our siblings. Amongst our age group, there was mostly boy cousins. So us sisters became a lot closer. And that kind of remained throughout our childhood, through teen years, and then into adulthood as well. We're all very close. We talk consistently. We have like our group messages.
Now, just like in every case, we always like to hear about the person we're discussing, not just as a victim, but who they were as a person, to kind of give us a better understanding of what they were like before this incident. Because one, it makes them more relatable. You may find commonalities with them, but it's important to remember that this isn't some character. This isn't some piece of evidence. This is a human being who had goals and aspirations before this tragedy. And that's something to keep in mind as we're going throughout the story, not only to make sure that we're treating it with the amount of respect it deserves, but I think it also gives you a different level of motivation, knowing who this person was and what they stood for. So when we spoke to Chloe and Kay, they obviously had nothing but nice things to say about their sister, Nikki. And here they are now talking about her. First, you'll hear from Chloe, and then you'll hear from Kay.
Nikki was really funny. She's the type of person that was always positive no matter what. And she was always your biggest cheerleader. She was always there for all of us. Nikki'd be the person that you would call if you're like, well, I have nothing to do on a Saturday afternoon. Like, hey, let's go shopping or let's go look for junk. And she's like, yeah, let's go. She was always down. Nothing was ever too boring for her.
She would find fun things in everything you did or said. She like loved laughing and just giggling, and everything was just funny to her. She took everything very lightheartedly. She didn't really get offended about things. If she did, she let it go like really quickly. So everything with her was just very lighthearted. Another really big quality that, like, to add on to what Chloe was saying, is that she had a really big heart. Like, when people say, oh, this person saw the good in everyone, Nikki truly did. She would see a criminal and say, look at the sadness in his eyes. He's seen some sadness. And truly to a fault, where she would just, she could forgive someone's.
Forgiving, yeah.
Yeah, very forgiving. She will forgive. Someone could be very bad, and if she saw like one positive thing that they did, she would say, we can forgive them. They have good in them.
You see, that's a really interesting clip there that I wanted to make sure I included, because as Chloe and Kay mentioned, almost to a fault, Nikki could find the good in anyone, and she was very willing to forgive. And as we discuss this case tonight, you may see that trait, which is admirable, may have contributed in a way to the situation that we have now, where Nikki, being the good, kind-hearted person that she is, may have given someone the benefit of the doubt who didn't deserve it. But you guys can be the judge. Now, in the late 2000s, when Nikki was still in her 20s, she met Tyler McCain while they were both working at the Wind River Resort and Casino, located on the Rancho Rio Reservation in Redding. Nikki was a cocktail waitress, while Tyler, a member of the Redding Rancheria tribe, worked in the slot machine department. Nikki's sister Kay also worked at the casino at the same time. She recalled Tyler had a flirtatious, charming personality. He pursued Nikki, and although he came across as outgoing, Nikki soon discovered that he had a shy side, which he ended up falling in love with. But Tyler had another side to him as well. According to magazine A News Cafe, Tyler had run-ins with the law, including felony burglary and misdemeanor vandalism charges. Despite his mistakes, Nikki and Tyler got married in 2010 and went on to have four children. They eventually settled down in a 3.5-acre property in the area just outside of the Rancho Rio Reservation, known as Happy Valley. By early 2020, Tyler was working as a spa manager, and Nikki was a stay-at-home mom. When the COVID pandemic hit, the spa shut down, leaving Tyler out of work and home with Nikki and the kids. Tyler began isolating himself, spending long hours in the garage, allegedly using drugs. This worried Nikki, and she would ask him to come inside and be part of the family, but Tyler didn't take that well. Arguments followed, but Nikki's family didn't realize how bad things had actually become since they hadn't been seeing her in person. It wasn't until later that they learned that Tyler had been both verbally and physically abusive to Nikki, leading to multiple police visits to their home. Here's Kay talking about it.
He was hanging out there more and more, and I know that bothered her a lot because she was like accusing him of doing drugs, you know, and so those were big fights because she's like, are you out there doing drugs? You know? And then it was just like, oh, how dare you accuse me of that? And then I think those verbal altercations got physical. If they weren't physical before, if they were physical before, I think they got more physical.
And by the way, this wasn't just all rumors. Multiple people witnessed Tyler's abuse and or the aftermath of it. A News Cafe reported that in one incident, Nikki was heard screaming for help, saying Tyler was attacking her. She was actually seen running barefoot, and her feet were bleeding from running on broken glass. Now, the witness that helped her also witnessed abrasions on her face, swollen lips, and marks around her neck that looked like handprints. In another incident, Tyler chased Nikki around their yard with a large wrench. There was also reports of Tyler threatening to decapitate Nikki and, in one instance, pouring gasoline on her vehicle. Nice guy. Now, Chloe and Kay told us that once the COVID restrictions began to ease up a little bit, Nikki could finally see her family in person, and that's when she started confiding in them about what was happening.
Once things kind of started to lift a little bit, that's when we kind of heard more about like the police calls and, oh, this happened. And then we were like, oh, like, wow, that's not good. And then she would tell us like, oh, you know, this happened. I called the police, but I didn't report anything when they came. And that happened a lot. And we told her anytime that happens, if you call the police, you need to say something because now the police are going to think you're wasting their time and they're coming all the way out there. And she said the police would say that we see that you look frazzled. I don't know if they necessarily said they saw anything, any injuries on her or anything, but she, at the end of the day, she still wanted things to be back the way they were before. So she didn't want him to get in trouble. She didn't want a record. She didn't want any of that. So by the time the police came, I think she was just kind of like, okay, I don't want him in trouble. So she wouldn't really ever report anything.
Now, to speak a little bit about this incident, I'm sure some of you are going to ask the question, well, if law enforcement was responding to their house and it was as bad as some witnesses reported that it was, why wasn't Tyler arrested? Even if Nikki didn't want to file charges. As we know, we've talked about it before. If I, as a police officer, respond to a domestic violence incident and I see visible injuries on one party or the other and I can determine who the primary aggressor was, I have an obligation to make an arrest, even if the victim does not want to pursue charges. So hypothetically, if law enforcement responded to the house and saw that Nikki was visibly injured, regardless of what she wanted, they should have made an arrest. So it does make me wonder, were there visible injuries and law enforcement just didn't do their job? Or was it more of a verbal altercation on most occasions where law enforcement would show up, they'd both be upset, meaning when I say both, I mean Nikki and Tyler, and yet there wasn't anything there to determine a primary aggressor, and so law enforcement would leave after checking in on them. This is one of those instances where I would love to have access to internal databases to see what type of police reports were taken, what was entered into the dispatch log by law enforcement officers after they cleared the scene. But I can tell you right now, with how new this case is, we're not going to have access to those reports anytime soon. Now, after having these conversations and Nikki opening up about her abuse to her family, she would go over to her parents' house or stay at Chloe's to get away whenever she and Tyler fought. And after a few days, Tyler would always text Chloe or Kay saying things like, quote, tell Nikki I love her and I'll change. Here's Chloe reading from one of those text messages that she received from Tyler.
Tell Nikki I love her and I hope to see her soon. Can you ask Nikki if she wants to go out of town with me for a few nights? Thanks, Chloe. If she doesn't want to go, the house will be free for her to get her things she's needing in the meantime. I'm going to come by. Thanks.
So there you have it. Very common trend. You'll have someone who is an abuser behind closed doors, but to the outside world, they act like they're this reasonable, very calm person who just wants the best for everyone. I've seen it a million times. I've told you guys about different examples where as a kid, I would see coaches and politicians who were the nicest people in the world. And once I became a police officer and I started responding to their houses, I saw a completely different side of them. And it changed me forever. It made me have a different perspective on people in general. But speaking more specifically to this incident, when you have someone who's an abusive person, they're not only going to try to present themselves as the good guy to their friends and family, they'll also try to do the same with the victim's family members and friends, because what they want is for those friends and family members to maybe question the allegations that the victim's presenting. And it's a very common tactic. What they're going to try to do is turn everyone against them so that when something like this happens, that victim is more apt to go back to the abuser because they feel like they have no one else. It's really diabolical. I'm not saying for sure that that's what Tyler's intentions were. I'm just putting it out there as a generic sense where this is something that as a police officer, I've seen many times. And just like in those incidents I just described, Nikki would also eventually return home, hoping that things would improve. And for a while they would, but eventually the abuse would start up again. And the situation eventually escalated to the point where the Redding Rancheria Tribal Court had to intervene to protect the McCain children. Initially, they were placed with Tyler's relatives, but later Kay and Chloe were also granted shared guardianship. But even after the children were removed, the violence against Nikki, it didn't stop. There was even an incident where Tyler's mother, Jeanette, got into a physical altercation with Nikki as well. And despite all of this, Nikki still chose not to press charges.
She loved her mother-in-law. They had a good relationship.
It was up and down.
It was up and down, but they did have moments when they would be really close. So then I think that was a piece of it too. She's like, well, I don't want to get them in trouble. I don't want to be the reason they're in trouble. And it's also like, well, she didn't mean it. Or, like, oh, well, you know, it's the heat of the moment. So she was always making up excuses as to why they didn't mean it. They didn't mean it. And it's very much speaks to someone who's been mentally and physically just manipulated, and they think this is normal. They think that, no, you caused this.
Yeah. As you can hear from that clip, it was a really interesting relationship, I guess we'll call it, between Jeanette and Nikki. And the physical altercation that I referred to before that clip, it wasn't the only one. There were multiple altercations. And in one of those disputes between Nikki and Jeanette, Jeanette actually called the police and filed the complaint against Nikki. And afterward, Nikki's sisters were really worried because now there was this record against Nikki, but nothing against Tyler or Jeanette, because Nikki had always chose never to file charges. And so they begged her to take the situation more seriously and to start reporting any future abuse. And we're just scratching the surface here, but this foundation of this kind of triangle here between Tyler, Jeanette, and Nikki is critical to the overall analysis of this investigation. So I want to really make sure we have an understanding of what was going on before Nikki's disappearance, because that's very important if we want to try to triangulate where she might be now and what may have occurred. So we got much more to cover. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Five years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Okay, we're back. And before the break, I was talking about how Nikki's family was really pushing the issue and telling her she needed to report any future abuse because clearly Tyler and Jeanette were willing to file charges against her. And as expected, the abuse did continue. And in November of 2023, Tyler attacked Nikki so brutally that she had to be hospitalized. It was after this incident that she finally decided to file charges against him. And according to the police report, on the evening of November 29th, between 8:15 and 8:30 p.m., Nikki returned home to find that Tyler wasn't there. So she went to the bedroom and started combing her hair. About 15 minutes later, Tyler arrived, clearly agitated and not making much sense. He entered the bedroom, jumped on Nikki, and pinned her to the ground before dragging her across the floor while repeatedly asking her, quote, "What's going on? What are you doing?" Understandably, Nikki was terrified. She said that Tyler's eyes were glazed over and she knew something was wrong. She tried to calm him down, but he began verbally assaulting her. He then hit her across the face with an open hand, pulled her hair, and then poured water all over her, which was inside of a jug that was on one of their dressers. The physical and mental abuse continued for 3 hours. The police report states that Tyler tied Nikki's ankles and wrists together with tape and placed tape over her mouth as well. And although she could still breathe, she couldn't speak. Tyler then flipped her onto her stomach, straddled her, and pulled her hair back with force, telling her that he was going to kill her. And Nikki believed him. He continued hitting her, and at one point, she felt him try to wrap something around her neck, but fortunately, he wasn't successful. At around 11:30 p.m., Tyler left the bedroom and went to the kitchen, and Nikki used that moment to free herself. She then grabbed her robe, which had her car keys inside of it, and she ran for her car. But as she drove away, Tyler chased after her and jumped on the hood of the vehicle, and he was yelling at her to stop, but she kept driving. So I'm assuming at some point, he either jumped or fell off. But again, she didn't stop. She headed straight to her mother's house. And Nikki stayed at her mom's house for a few days before going to Chloe's house. But when Chloe saw her, she immediately knew something was wrong and insisted on taking her to the hospital. Both of Nikki's eyes were swollen and blackened, and she had visible injuries on her forehead and face. At the hospital, an officer came to speak with Nikki. She explained what had happened, and the officer noted obvious signs of trauma. When asked if Tyler had assaulted her before, Nikki confirmed that he had, but it was never this severe. Nikki told the officer that she wouldn't be returning to the home she shared with Tyler and would be staying with her sister instead. The officer recommended that she get a restraining order against Tyler and provided her with resources on domestic violence and her rights as a victim. Before leaving the hospital, Nikki met with a victim advocate. Nikki's sisters believe that the advocate gave Nikki a sense of empowerment as she ultimately decided to press charges against Tyler that same day.
I think she realized how serious it was. I think she was like, whoa, this is scary. I could have died.
I think she felt that night that she was going to die.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's sometimes how it goes, right? It takes a victim almost losing their life before they realize it's not going to get any better. I've told you guys before, if someone puts their hands on you once, they're capable of doing it again. And you have to ask yourself, is it worth sticking around to find out? And I just want to say about the victim advocate, I can tell you as a patrolman, we had multiple victim advocates that worked directly with our agency, and what an asset they are. Because it is difficult for victims of domestic violence to sometimes open up to police officers because they know anything that they say, the officer has a responsibility to document and report it. And so does the victim advocate to a certain degree. But with victim advocates, they're not law enforcement officers. They're not pressing charges against anyone. And they are genuinely there to help. So for anybody out there who may be going through something like this, understand that even if you don't want to press charges, you don't have to be in a situation like Nikki to go into a police department and ask for a pamphlet or ask for some documentation on the resources available to you. And I promise you, if you ask for the domestic violence victims advocate phone line, they will give it to you. And if they don't, DM me and I'll find it for you because it's available at everywhere you go. It's a federally funded operation. And even if it's not in your immediate town, I can promise you that in one of the metropolitan areas around you, even if you're not living in that jurisdiction, they will provide those resources to you and they are always free. Now back to the timeline. After meeting with Nikki at the hospital, the officer who had taken the report from her contacted other deputies and they headed over to the McCain home. Tyler was taken into custody without incident, and when asked if he had seen Nikki or the injuries on her face, he admitted that he was aware of them, but he claimed he wasn't responsible in any way, shape, or form. He said that he hadn't seen Nikki since around 8 p.m. on November 29th. Now check this one out because I bet you didn't see this one coming. When the police asked if he and Nikki had gotten into a fight, Tyler completely denied it. Instead, he claimed that Nikki had gotten into a fight with another woman. Now, he said he hadn't seen it happen, but he suspected that Nikki was actually having an affair with this woman. And on top of that, Tyler insisted that he and Nikki had a good relationship, that they were happy together, and that there had never been any type of physical altercation between them. Now, obviously, the police didn't believe Tyler, and he was charged with four felonies: corporal injury to a spouse, false imprisonment by violence, making criminal threats, and assault likely to cause great bodily injury. And Nikki refused to drop the charges, and for months she stayed with her mom and her sister. But I will say this, Nikki did maintain contact with Tyler. There was an incident where he asked her for a ride to a court hearing since he wasn't allowed to drive due to a suspended license. But instead of going to the courthouse, Tyler forced Nikki to take him to his lawyer's office. Once they arrived, the lawyer asked Nikki to recant her statement about the November domestic violence incident, but Nikki refused. So Tyler got pissed off, took off in her car, leaving her stranded at the office. But even after this incident, Tyler kept pressuring her to drop the charges, but she wouldn't do it. So eventually, he decided to change up his tactics and began convincing her to move back in with him, promising that he would change and that they would be able to get their children back. And understandably, as a mom, eventually, Nikki moved back in with Tyler, but she never dropped the charges, just to put that out there. She never dropped the charges. Now fast forward a little bit. On May 7th, 2024, just 10 days before Nikki disappeared, Tyler's preliminary hearing was held for the domestic violence charges. He pleaded not guilty to all charges. That same day, Nikki texted Chloe telling her she was done with Tyler. She was preparing to divorce him, looking at furniture for a new home, and making plans to regain custody of her children. Nikki seemed confident and determined. Now on May 17th, Nikki texted Chloe to let her know that she and Tyler's mother, Jeanette, remember her, were at the hospital visiting Tyler's brother, Brian, who was currently in the ICU. Nikki explained that Jeanette had called her in a panic, hysterical over Brian's condition. Wanting to help, Nikki decided to go with her to the hospital. Now, there's still a lot of unanswered questions about what exactly happened that day, but from what Chloe and Kay have gathered, it's likely that Nikki drove Jeanette in Jeanette's car to the hospital because Jeanette was probably too upset to drive.
I think that Nikki was like, okay, let's go to the hospital. Let's go be with Brian. Because, I mean, even though Nikki had her ups and downs, a lot of them with that family, I think she still loved all of them. She really cared about them.
Like we said, she was so forgiving. So she's like, oh my gosh, if they need me, this is for Brian. Of course, I will be there for you guys. So it wasn't that out of the ordinary for her to have been with them. And like Chloe was saying, Nikki had said Jeanette was hysterical. So it wouldn't be that far-fetched that she was driving Jeanette's car. We think it was kind of one of those mad dash of let's just get in the cars and let's just all go. Who can drive? Let's just go out there.
So yeah, that's what Kay and Chloe have gathered up to this point. And I will say, law enforcement may have a better idea of what actually transpired, whether this is even true or not. Well, how would they know that? For one, GPS coordinates from Nikki's cell phone and Jeanette's cell phone, they would be able to see if their cell phones were traveling together while driving from wherever they were to the hospital. Were they in the same vehicle? Were they in a different vehicle? And then more than likely from cameras in the area, whether it was traffic cameras, the hospital parking lot camera, or convenience stores or something nearby, more than likely, hopefully, they would get at least one camera where, based on the GPS coordinates of the cell phones, they would be able to line that up and see exactly what vehicle passed by at that time. And they would be able to determine whether or not they were in Jeanette's vehicle, they were in Nikki's vehicle, or they were in some other vehicle. This is all pretty basic investigative stuff, but as I said at the top of the show, Chloe and Kay do not have access to this information, and at this point, the officers who are handling this case, they're not giving anyone any information. So do I think they have the answers to this specific question? Absolutely. Are they sharing it? No. Now, once they got there, Nikki texted Chloe that she was at the hospital, and they kept texting back and forth throughout the night. Nikki never mentioned that she had left the hospital, so Chloe isn't sure how long she was actually there. Now, just after midnight, Nikki sent Chloe another text, but this time she said she had Jeanette's car and was about to drive it back to Jeanette's house, but she didn't mention if anyone else was with her. Now, at least on Nikki's side of the family, this was the last time that anyone ever heard from her. Now, Chloe and Kay don't fully understand why Nikki was returning the car after midnight. It's pretty late. They don't know if Nikki had been at the hospital the entire evening and then decided to leave after midnight because it was getting late, so she had to drop off the car first, or if she had left the hospital at some point during the evening, maybe went home for a little while, and was now bringing the car back to Jeanette's house after, you know, doing whatever she was doing. But again, all of these questions have already been answered by law enforcement. If Nikki had her phone on her, which we believe that she did, they would quickly be able to get her coordinates and determine exactly where she was at whatever time during the evening. Chloe and Kay are having to speculate. Law enforcement knows exactly where at least Nikki's phone was throughout that night. And if there were cameras at the hospital, they would also be able to confirm whether or not she was there the whole time and who she was with. However, Chloe and Kay bring up an interesting point. Based on what we know on the outside right now, not what law enforcement knows, you have to ask the question, was Nikki really the one that sent that text message?
That's the part that we're not 100% sure about. Did she write that and say that she was bringing the car back? We don't know. Or did someone else write that? I mean, when you think about it, like, why couldn't she have waited till the morning? What was so urgent that she needed her car that night? So just a couple things like that that didn't really make sense.
Yeah, so it's a really valid point. Do we know if Nikki was the one who actually sent that text message? Like I said, that was the last text anyone ever received from Nikki, at least on Nikki's side of the family. And so without having the phone records, we don't know what type of phone activity happened after that text was sent. And that may give us some insight as to whether or not it was Nikki sending the text messages or someone else. But as I've said multiple times, and I will continue to say it, that information, those phone records, law enforcement has access to it. And I would even argue that her family would potentially be able to get those records as well. Although I will say at this point, it's still a little early. And I can tell you from personal experience, these phone companies, AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, you name it, they're all the same. They're very apprehensive about giving out phone records unless you have some type of written contract where you have access to that person's account. There's been situations where you can have a spouse who believes their significant other is cheating on them and they're trying to figure out more. So they will call these phone providers and say, hey, I'm married to this person. You know, can I have their records? And if they're not on there, they won't give them to them because legally they're not supposed to. So there can be some hurdles. I will say that with law enforcement being involved, it may be even more difficult. They may have flagged the account. But it is possible, and regardless of what the situation is right now, law enforcement definitely has those records. But for the sake of this conversation, let's assume that Nikki did send that text message. Here's Chloe's account of what happened after receiving it.
That was the last message text me, and it was late, and I remembered I was awake because my son was kind of he was up all night and he was restless. And so I remembered, I was like, okay. And then I remember just going to sleep after reading that text message, but then waking up early the next morning and back and asking how Brian was. Yes. And I didn't get a text reply back. And I text at 7:00. And then I text about an hour after that. And then maybe after the hour, another 30 minutes. Cause I'm like, okay, how's Brian? You know, is everything okay? And then I'm like, okay, now we need your daughter's soccer uniform. Like, have you seen it? So I've been trying to text her and I didn't get a reply back.
Yeah. So there you have it. Chloe texts Nikki back early in the morning, although we don't know the exact time, and Nikki never responds. So the assumption is between that last text being sent around midnight to whatever time Chloe texted her back in the morning, that's the window where something went down. Or if you're in the camp that Nikki never actually sent that last text message and that it was someone else, then the timeline expands a little bit, where whenever Nikki is last seen on camera or the whatever the cell phone coordinates dictate, that's the window where whatever happened to her took place, whether she went missing or someone got a hold of her and there was some type of foul play involved. That's the window we're looking at right now. But I will say this, even after those text messages went unanswered, Chloe wasn't on high alert just yet, because she gets up and she thinks to herself, oh man, Nikki's daughter's soccer uniform might have ended up at Jeanette's house where the kids often stayed. So Chloe's fiance went over to ask if the jersey was there. Now, this is where the story takes its first turn, because when Chloe's fiance got to the house, he asked about Nikki going to the hospital with Jeanette the night before, and Jeanette said that Nikki hadn't been there at all. Nikki's sisters did tell us that when they heard about this from Chloe's fiance, they didn't think much of it at the time, and it wasn't until later that they started to replay it. And that's completely understandable to me. In that moment, you know, you have friends and family members. How often have you had someone not text you back right away or tell you a story that doesn't line up when you hear it from another person? And then when you follow up, it makes sense. So at this point, they're not automatically going to, oh my God, our sister is being held captive or she's injured somewhere and she needs our help. That's what we have in hindsight. We know where we are now and why we're covering this story. But when you're living in that moment, it's much different. So I think their reaction at that point is completely understandable. However, it didn't take long before that attitude changed, because on Tuesday, May 21st, Nikki's sisters realized that no one had heard from Nikki. She hadn't responded to any messages and she hadn't responded to any of the group chats. Then things took a more concerning turn when Tyler texted Chloe, quote, "Have you heard from your sister? I think she's missing." When the family asked Tyler for more details, he said that he and Nikki had gotten into a fight at his mother's house on the night of the 17th, and afterward, Nikki had taken off. Later, he changed the story, saying that the fight actually had taken place at their home, but Nikki still left afterward. However, that wasn't the most concerning part to Nikki's family, because if you remember what I mentioned earlier, when Nikki and Tyler got into a fight, Nikki would go stay with her mother or Chloe, and then a few days later, like clockwork, Tyler would message Chloe and say, you know, things were going to get better, he was sorry about it, and, you know, Nikki could come home and that he loved her. This was different. Not only was Tyler's message to the family unusual for him, but he waited at least 3 days before contacting them. And we still have more to cover, because Tyler's story, it's not completely adding up. We're going to take our last break. We'll be right back.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, we're back. And after Tyler sent that message, the following day on May 22nd, Chloe reported Nikki missing. She then went with the sheriff's deputy to Nikki and Tyler's house to conduct a wellness check, but no one was there. The next morning, Chloe requested another wellness check, but again, no one was home. On May 24th, Chloe returned to Nikki and Tyler's house for the third time, and finally they spoke with Tyler. He said he didn't know where Nikki was, however, he knew that her 2002 Chevy Avalanche had broken down on a bridge off Bowman Road in Tehama County. Chloe offered to drive him to pick up the truck, but Tyler declined, saying that one of his friends would take him. Chloe immediately called Kay and they decided to search for Nikki's truck themselves. They checked all the bridges along Bowman Road, but there was no sign of the avalanche. Chloe then went back to Nikki's house to check on things, and this time she spoke with a man named Justin, who had been living in a trailer on the property. Chloe then asked him if he had seen Nikki or her truck, and he explained that on the night of May 17th, Tyler asked him to pick up Nikki at Jeanette's house after she had dropped off Jeanette's car. He said he went to Jeanette's, had something to eat, and talked to both Jeanette and Nikki, and after eating, he drove Nikki back home, but he didn't know what happened after that. He went on to say that he hadn't seen Nikki since, however, he did see Tyler driving her truck around. So obviously this is very interesting and I have a bunch of questions, none of which can be answered by anyone right now other than law enforcement. And my first question would be, when Chloe's husband went to Jeanette's home, okay, she said that Nikki never went to the hospital, but did she say that Nikki was there at her home and they hung out for a while, maybe had some dinner before Justin brought her home? If she didn't mention that, that's a major problem. But I don't know. We don't know. We may never know. But as of right now, that is a big question. And as far as Tyler saying that he hadn't seen her since the 17th, I wonder how descriptive he was. Did he admit that Justin brought her home and they were at the house? Maybe that would line up where Justin could have brought her home and Tyler and Nikki could have gotten into a fight. And then technically, and I'm using air quotes for everyone on audio here, she could have taken off. That is possible if that story all lines up. The question is that what they're saying or is that what I'm piecing together here? It should be pretty fluid. It should be pretty concurrent. If that's what happened and that's the truth, it shouldn't be that hard to explain it. So there are some questions here. It does make you wonder who is not telling the truth because clearly someone isn't. And it could be Nikki who was lying about going to the hospital. It could be Jeanette lying about seeing Nikki that day, or it could be Tyler lying by saying Nikki and him got into a fight and she just took off. Your guess at this point is as good as mine. But, and this is a big but, if we're to believe Tyler and him and Nikki got into a fight and Nikki decided to take off and go somewhere, how did she get there? If we're to believe Justin, Tyler had her truck. That's a big problem. And how would Tyler explain that right now if I had the chance to ask him? I'd be very curious. Speaking of Nikki's truck, on May 25th, law enforcement found the avalanche in Tehama County around 40 minutes east of her home.
It's in an area that Tyler's family has a lot of property, like on the way to that area. And it's one of those spots where if you don't frequent there, you wouldn't really even, I see it on a map, but I was really shocked at even like the terrain out there. It was just like, wow, I've never seen anything like this before. It's really hilly. It's not super woodsy. It's just really hilly. So you see all these hills and it's just hills and this road. So yeah. It's almost eerie. It's kind of like this eerie feeling of there's nothing here, like no cell phone service, that kind of spot. We later found out it was further down. You keep going past Bowman Road, you come onto Highway 36, and it was off Highway 36. So that's where the car was actually found. We don't know how the car got there. It could have been there the whole time, or it could have been somewhere else the entire time and then planted there. We don't know. Someone had to have followed them there. It's quite a trek.
So there you have it. The truck is found. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere, but on the way to an area where Tyler's family owns property. So major questions here. Back to what I just said before that clip. Justin said the last person that he saw driving Nikki's truck was Tyler. And then the truck is found near where Tyler owns property. And if you remember what I said, Chloe asked Tyler about Nikki and if he had seen her, and he said no, but he said that he heard her truck was on a bridge on Bowman Road, and that's not completely off. As they said, it was on Highway 36, which is off Bowman Road. But again, the question becomes, how did Tyler know that? Who did he hear that from? More questions that I would like to know that we do not have answers to right now, and that is something that when the case is this new, this fresh, that is going to be a common theme. Now, 2 days after Nikki's truck was found, a large volunteer search party gathered in the area, but unfortunately, no evidence was located and there was no sign of Nikki anywhere. Since then, many more searches have been conducted, but Tyler hasn't participated in any of them. He and his family have been interviewed by law enforcement multiple times, though the details of those interviews remain unknown. There weren't many updates in Nikki's case until July 3rd, when a fire broke out on Tyler and Nikki's property in Happy Valley. According to Cal Fire, several of Tyler's vehicles were destroyed in the incident. Now, Tyler claimed the fire was an accident started by a hot catalytic converter that came in contact with dry grass. He was issued a citation but was not arrested, as there wasn't enough evidence to prove criminal negligence. Now, an interesting side note here, just one day before the fire on Nikki and Tyler's property, another fire broke out on Tyler's cousin's remote backcountry property. Now, a search of that area had been planned, but the fire prevented it from happening. Now, there's no direct evidence linking these fires to Nikki's disappearance, but the timing and circumstances are certainly intriguing. Now, fast forward a little bit in the timeline. On July 5th, the charges against Tyler for the November 2023 domestic violence incident were dismissed because of Nikki's disappearance. The judge cited Tyler's constitutional right to face his accuser as a reason for the dismissal. Now, thankfully, due to the 3-year statute of limitations, the charges can be refiled if Nikki comes forward again, which leaves around 2.5 years on the clock as we speak. Now, as these charges were being dropped, Nikki's family held a Justice for Nikki rally right outside the courthouse. And as Tyler walked by, Chloe and Kay confronted him, asking him where their sister was. Tyler responded by flipping them off and just shrugging his shoulders. Unfortunately, that's the last significant update we have in Nikki's case. It's been over 3 months since the domestic violence charges against Tyler were dropped. It's important to note that his story about what happened to Nikki continues to change. To one person, he claimed Nikki ran away with a female love interest. To another person, he said that she left with a man and they had gone to Las Vegas. These inconsistencies have raised even more flags for Nikki's family.
The thing with him is he's, from what Nikki had told us, is very jealous. So for him to just be like, yep, no biggie, she's just like has a lesbian lover and I don't care. Or she's just out with her ex and I don't care. That was not how Tyler would have responded if he knew his wife had a boyfriend or a lesbian lover.
Yeah, I get where they're coming from. If you have an abuser, an alleged abuser, they are usually pretty possessive over their victims. So if Tyler genuinely thought that Nikki had ran off with another man or even a woman, he would be extremely upset about it more than likely and would be on the hunt for her to try to find her and track down this guy or girl that she's with, because it would bother him to think that she had left him for another person. And so the fact that he seems kind of complacent, kind of nonchalant, not really caring about her whereabouts and just basically passing it off like, yeah, she was over me, I guess she was done with it, when we have previous history of him texting her family trying to win her back, it is a little out of the ordinary. And some of you may say it's because he knows there's some things going on and he doesn't want to step on anything that could implicate him in a crime that he didn't commit. Or you could also say that this behavior has changed because he knows exactly where Nikki is and it's not with another person. Now, in addition to Tyler, his mother, Jeanette, has also changed her story a couple times. At one point, she told Nikki's sisters that an Uber picked Nikki up at her house after she dropped off the car. But as I mentioned earlier, Justin said that he picked up Nikki and brought her home. So we're sitting here right now not knowing what the truth is. What we do know is that no one seems to have their story straight. And so far, no one, including Tyler, has been named as a person of interest or a suspect in Nikki's disappearance. Law enforcement has been extremely tight-lipped about the direction of the investigation, and I can respect that. What we do know for certain is that Nikki is still missing, and her family is hoping that she comes home soon, but if she doesn't, they want answers, and they want someone held accountable. All right, let's dive into this perspective, and I want to elaborate on some of the things I've already said. I weighed in a lot throughout the episode, so there's not going to be a ton at the end here because, for one, very new case, not a lot of information available, and what we do have, it's pretty self-explanatory what needs to be done if it hasn't been done already. So, what I've said multiple times through the episodes, GPS coordinates, triangulation of cell phones for not only Nikki, but Justin, Jeanette, Tyler, anybody else who could be connected to Nikki in any way, shape, or form at in that window of time where she kind of went off the map. You also need to look at cell phone records for those same people and maybe others as well, family members, friends, you name it. Anybody who could be connected to her, get search warrants, get those cell phone records. Worst case scenario, you have records that you don't need, but it's important to get them as soon as possible, especially if Nikki's still out there somewhere. But you want to look at those records. You want to see if you can pinpoint where these individuals were and see if their stories match up with what their cell phone tells us. If it doesn't, that's when you need to bring them in and drill them down on their inconsistencies. The same thing goes for cameras. You want camera footage from the day of the incident, and I've already mentioned the hospital footage if they have it, parking lots, convenience stores, traffic cams, anywhere where you could pick up either Nikki's Chevy Avalanche or Jeanette's vehicle or Tyler's vehicle. You want to try to put them at certain locations and again, see if it matches up with the cell phone coordinates. You also want to learn as much as you can about Nikki's Chevy Avalanche, specifically after the incident, because we know the vehicle at some point was at Nikki and Tyler's property. What happened after that? According to Justin, Tyler was driving it around. Can we confirm that? Do we have camera footage, cell phone coordinates, the same thing over and over? And you would like to try to track that vehicle all the way out to Highway 36. Are there any cameras along the way? Any witnesses of people who were maybe driving alongside the vehicle or passing the vehicle who could potentially identify the vehicle and even more so identify who was driving it? Now, in addition to the cell phone activity and any potential camera footage, we also need to conduct some search warrants. Search warrants on Jeanette's house, search warrant on Tyler and Nikki's house, search warrant on Nikki's Chevy Avalanche, search warrant on any of Tyler's vehicles. What are we looking for? A potential sign of struggle, maybe do some luminol tests to see if anything was cleaned up after the fact. Yes, I mentioned the two fires. Although it may have destroyed some potential evidence, it still should be done just to make sure we rule it out. There is a possibility that even though there was an attempt to destroy a possible crime scene, maybe they didn't. Maybe they messed up. Maybe they didn't get it all. I've said it before. I don't know if I've said it here on Detective Perspective, but criminals make mistakes. It's our job as investigators to find those mistakes. And if I had to go out on a limb here, we're not dealing with geniuses. So if Tyler or his family members are involved in this, there's something to find. And maybe it's going to require asking them to take some polygraph tests. Yes, I know some people are hesitant about poly tests. I understand it. But at minimum, it can be used as a tool. And what we gather from that information may lead to further search warrants in areas that we didn't think about initially. So you have nothing to lose, everything to gain. The problem with that is I don't see Tyler's family being that willing to participate in these types of activities voluntarily. You're going to need something on them to get them to do it. And as of right now, at least on the surface, it doesn't seem like law enforcement has much. But I also want to transition for a minute because there is a world where Tyler, who in my opinion, based on what we know, is not a good guy, could be telling the truth about what happened that night. It is possible that Nikki came home, they got into a fight, and like they had in the past, Nikki took off. Maybe she took off in her car and Justin's wrong. She could have driven down the highway. Maybe she picked someone up. Maybe she was with someone. They got out to Highway 36 and something went down. Or she could have been driving alone and maybe she pulled over and she was on her phone or she felt like something was wrong with her vehicle. And someone pulled up, presented themselves as someone who could be helpful and turned out to have an ulterior motive. Or you could have a situation where based on everything that was going on in Nikki's life, she decided to take off and not tell her friends or family. And I'm going to put it out there right now that I do not believe that to be the case. But I would not be doing my job if I didn't at least say it. Can't get tunnel vision. I don't know Nikki any better than any of you guys out there. And so we have to explore all options or we're not doing our job properly. Now, ending this perspective on a positive note, this is not an old case. And with the older cases, 15, 20 years old, where you have a missing person, it is more likely than not that the individual involved in that case is no longer with us. That's not the case here. There's a real potential that Nikki is out there somewhere. I don't know what the current conditions are for her, but I'm hoping that someone who watches or listens to this episode was in that area that night and may have seen her, her vehicle, or maybe someone driving her vehicle, and for some reason, they haven't came forward yet. Maybe they don't even know at this point that the information they have is critical to this investigation. That's why we do this. So if you're that person and you potentially have information that could be critical to solving this case, here's a quick recap. Nikki Cheng Saley McCain was last heard from after midnight on May 18th, 2024. She texted her sister Chloe that she was returning her mother-in-law Jeanette's car to Jeanette's house on the Redding Rancheria. That was the last time anyone had contact with Nikki, according to Nikki's family. And a week later, on May 25th, her 2002 Chevy Avalanche was found abandoned in a remote area of Tehama County, about 40 minutes from her home. Nikki is Asian with brownish red hair and brown eyes. She has a forearm tattoo with flowers. Anyone with information about Nikki's case is asked to contact the Sheriff's Office Major Crimes Unit at 530-245-6135. To support Nikki's family, please share her story and follow their Facebook page, Help Find Nikki Cheng Saley McCain. The family also asks that you share Nikki's flyer, no matter where you live. And my final words, as always, go out to Nikki's family and friends. We're thinking about you guys. I also want to send a special thank you to Kay and Chloe for being a part of this episode and also trusting me to tell your sister's story. That's not something you have to do, and it's a responsibility that I take very seriously. And now that the story's out there, I'm really hoping that one of our listeners or viewers has that critical piece of the puzzle that will bring your sister home. And if that does happen, I will be right here letting all of you know. But until then, everyone stay safe out there. I'll see you soon.